very, I would say, as Haredi as a school it could get. So real Talmud Torah, where we used to go. It wasn't Hasidish, it was Litvash. We used to go, I still remember, in fifth grade. We went once a month to visit Rav Shachin Panovich. It was the real thing. And my parents went only because of Bnei Akiva. So in the afternoon, I went to Bnei Akiva. The only one in my class. So I couldn't wear a strugi to school because I would be kicked out. Now, I was very lucky because I was the top in my class in Gemara, so they didn't touch me. Okay, I'm purposely throwing this in. So they knew I'm going to Bnei Akiva, so they overlooked that situation that I'm actually attending Bnei Akiva in the afternoon. They didn't even care about the co-edness. That wasn't the topic. Over there was a real ideological argument with the Zionist idea. That was their issue. Okay. Fast forward. High school, I go to Yeshiva High School, Nativ Meir, pretty prominent high school in Israel. That was a fight. They really didn't want me to go there. They wanted me to continue the route in Panovich, whatever. I didn't. Baruch Hashem. And I show up on Yom Yerushalayim to Merkaz Arav. Anybody here was ever on Yom Yerushalayim in Merkaz Arav? Okay. Not outside, inside. The place is ecstatic, meaning either you're into the messianic approach to Zionism, but for sure, if you're not, you feel it there. They're walking around in that room on Yom Yerushalayim night, packed Beis Midrash and Merkaz Arav. Everybody's convinced that basically Mashiach's here. We just, I don't know, we're living a different la-la land. And the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Avram Shapira Zatzal, then gets up to speak, and everybody's ecstatic, and they're singing to him. And then the Prime Minister walks in. Later on, after the disengagement, they stopped inviting Prime Ministers, they stopped bringing all the army officers. Okay, I guess Mashiach was still somehow, someplace, I don't know. But leave it to them, I don't deal with Mashiach too much, I deal with practicality. But everybody in the room gets up and are singing exactly the same way they sang to the Rosh Yeshiva. And the next day, I remember the first year I went, I was 16 years old, and I remember there was a very non-popular paper, it died, used to be called Hatzofer. Hatzofer was the religious Zionist newspaper, you know, they used to call it a historical book because usually they were always 2 weeks late on the real news. But it always had editorials that really spoke about the ideology. And I remember the editorial the next day of Hatzofer. After that, Yom Yerushalayim that I went to. And the editorial was talking, are we confusing our children? And what was his issue? The Prime Minister who spoke wasn't a religious Jew. He for sure did not represent anything about religion. The Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz is the Rosh Yeshiva. They both got equal level of respect and honor. And the article went about, and I remember 16-year-old, he's talking about how would high schoolers look at it. And I'm the high schooler reading it. I still remember next morning, and somehow I was sitting on the desk in the yeshiva in Nativ Meir. And he's talking about how he thinks there's a problem with giving equal respect. We're confusing the kids. We go, what would a kid say when he walks out? A kid, when he walks out, could say, hey, it's okay to be either one. I could be from a Rosh Yeshiva, awesome. I could be a secular prime minister who's doing a lot for the country, awesome. I could be a general in the army who's not religious, awesome. They're all equal to us. Now, why am I sharing these two stories? Because for me, coming from 8 years in a Haredi elementary school, I got what he's talking about. In a Haredi elementary school, there was one issue only. You want to be a gadol. Torah only counts. Everything else is not important. It's an extreme. So here we have two approaches. I see an editorial when I'm 16 telling me, hey, is our message confusing to our kids? And I know that where I grew up for 8 years, the message was very clear, a one targeted message. So I want to analyze these two approaches. And perhaps, since I went through that system, I want to a little bit suggest maybe something that I personally took out, which I think there's a certain element of truth in all of these topics I just mentioned, and how to bond them together. And I want to start with a very famous story source in the Gemara. You have it in source one. And I want to take it from a different angle. I'm sure you heard the story many, many times, but I purposely want to take it from a different angle that I don't think people pay attention to so much. The story is a famous story of Rashbi, of Shimon ben Yochi, right? In the cave. Famous story of Rashbi in the cave. Now let's understand who Rashbi is. Rashbi has an argument with Rabbi Ishmael in the Gemara in Brachot. How does a person need to live our life in this world? Rabbi Ishmael says a person needs, his famous statement is, Haneg Bahem Minag Derech Eretz, says Rabbi Ishmael. A person cannot just sit and learn all day. You need to be part of the world. You need to go out to work, right? And when you're not working, learn Torah. That was Rabbi Ishmael's approach. Rashbi said, how could you do that? If you're going to harvest when it's time to harvest, when you're going to plant when it's time to plant, Rashbi's famous scream, Torah Mate'aleh, who's going to learn Torah? Therefore, Rashbi's approach is that if we're righteous, and if God, if we're doing what God expects us to do, we'll sit and call it all day. And our parents will support us. No, that's, I'm kidding. But that's Rashbi's approach. The Gemara ends in Brachot. Very interesting ending. Harbe asu kerabi Ishmael v'alta beda. Majority of the world practice the life that Rabbi Ishmael is suggesting. Go to work, be part of the world, and when you have time at night, go to learn. Harbe asu. And kmo Rabbi and kmo Rashbi v'lo alta. It didn't work. That's the end of the Gemara in Brachot. I'm not bringing that Gemara. Why am I bringing that? Clearly, Rashbi is a little bit extreme. Right? That's an extreme approach. I want to show Rashbi's extremism continuing in this story in Source 1, Gemara and Shabbat. Famous Gemara and Shabbat. Discussion of three rabbis, how to look at the Roman Empire, at the achievements they had in this world. Okay? Source 1. Yatvei Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. This is Rashbi. Three rabbis are sitting and discussing how to look at the Roman Empire. Okay? Ve'yativ Yehuda ben Gerim Gabay. Okay? Yehuda ben Gerim, a convert, was sitting there as well, and he's the one who's going to let the Roman Empire know that this is what's taking place. And let's listen how each one of them spoke. It's in the second line in Source 1. What each of them thought of what the Roman Empire did for the humankind, not just for the Jews. Patach Rabbi Yehuda v'hamal. Kama na'im ma'asehem shel uma zu. Look how wonderful this Roman Empire is. Look how much good they do. Tiknu shvakim, they created markets. Tiknu ksharim, they built bridges. Tiknu mechetzaot, they created huge bathing areas. Rabbi Yehuda is looking at what the Roman Empire did, and they're saying they actually did good. They really developed this world. They brought the world to the next level. Rabbi Yossi Shatak, not clear, and this is not our topic, but it's very interesting to analyze, what is this silence? Is the silence of because I don't know? It's because I'm afraid that whatever I'll say I'll mess up? Or is this a silence that is an opinion? But that's not our topic today. For sure not when you only have half an hour. And then, Ne'ena Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochi ve'amar. Listen to Rashbi. Kol ma shetiknu lo tiknu lo tzoch atzpam. Opposite extreme from Rabbi Yehuda. All what they did, no good. Tiknu shvakim lo shibem zonot. Merchetzaot la'adem mehm atzmam. Ksharim litol mechetz. It's just for tolls. Everything he showed a negative reasoning for anything they developed. Everything's bad. Yehuda ben Gerim that sat there went to reveal the conversation that took place. Amru, this is what the Roman Empire decided to do, clearly. Yehuda she'ilah, Yehuda said that we're so great, we'll give him a promotion. He became the chief rabbi. Yosef she'shatak, igleh le'tzipori. He's going to have to go to exile to Tzipori because he kept quiet. Shimon she'gina yereg. They decided they want to kill Rashbi. What does Rashbi do? Him and his son run away and hide in the Bet Midrash. Very natural place for Rashbi. He's the one who tells us never leave the Bet Midrash. You need to be there morning and night. So where is he going to hide first place? He runs to the Bet Midrash. Natural place for him. So probably he didn't even need to run away. That's where he was the whole time. Kol yom avimati lo dvitu rifta vekuza demaya vekarche. Every single day, his wife would bring him food, sandwiches, some drinks, that he should have what to do during the day, that he should have food. Kitakiv gzerata amar le'librei, he told his son is sitting with him there, nashim da'atam kalalem. By the way, this is the most misinterpreted phrase that's used in our... when they try to knock off and say, oh, look what we say about women. No. What he's saying over here, the reference of this statement, is a reference that they're going to come and torture the women. They're going to torture them. And if they're going to torture them, they're not going to be able to maintain that secret and it's going to come out. So he decides to run away. It's not nashim da'atam kalalem, meaning women are loose and they do whatever and we can't trust them. That's not the topic. That's not. This is the source of that line. And just to knock that out, that was worth it for today. Okay? Nashim datan kala, the source in the Gemara, means that Rashbi was worried that they'll be tortured and therefore they'll reveal the secret of where he is. Azlu tashu b'marata. Now, this is the next extreme. They're not just leaving a Bet Midrash. They're going to a cave. In the cave that's representing no growth, in a cave there's nothing, there's no light, there's no nothing as disconnected as possible to be from the world. And what happens in that cave? There's a miracle. Itrachesh nisa ibrelu charuva ve'ena demaya. It was a miracle. And a whale of water was revealed, so they had water, and a tree of charuvim. Okay, what is charuv in English?
Carob.
Carob. Yeah, I guess today when they make chocolate from those things, because I guess it's healthier, that's what he was eating then. He discovered that. So that's what they lived on. Tree of carobs and water. I guess we're very skinny afterwards. Havu meshalchi minayu ve'avu yat ve'yatzavarayu bechala. What did they do? They were afraid their clothes will get ruined. So they would strip and sit in sand till their neck, okay, and basically learn all day. Be'ina tziluye, when they wanted to daven, lavshu michsu matzlu, and the same thing. In other words, imagine all these years, Rashbi and his son sitting in a cave in dirt up to their neck, learning and enjoying water and carpentry, disconnect from the world completely. This is almost, I would say, Rashbi's running away. That's his dream. Right? That's a shita. Don't be part of the world. Just sit and learn. What happens? Fast forward. After 12 years, we're looking now at the fourth line. Ata Eliyahu vekamapitcha demarata. Eliyahu Hanavi comes to the entrance of the cave and lets them know it's time to go out. Just think, if he wouldn't come, they would stay there till the rest of their life. They were happy. Amar, man lidei lebar yochi, demit kesav, vatik zarate. Who's going to tell Rashbi that the Roman Emperor was dead? There's no decree, it's safe to leave. Just try to imagine. Any person, for sure, someone who's living 12 years of a disconnect of the world, just learning Torah morning to night, him and his son, suddenly to walk out to the world, can you imagine what type of psak halacha you would start giving people? Let's see what happens. Chazu inshe dekakal vevezareh. Rashbi walks out, and he sees that everybody's living a normal life, like Rabbi Shmuel said. He remembers his debate with Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel said, you need to go out to work. Amal, menichim chayei olam oskim b'chayei sheah? How could you do that? He was devastated that people are actually going out to work and not sitting in kollel. Kol makom shenotnim enem, every place they're looking at, miyad nisraf, it right away burnt. They were very spiritual. They had that power. Yatzta bat kol v'amra lahem. A voice came out of heaven and said, "Lachivo lami atzaten. You came out to destroy my world. Who needs that Torah that's destroying the world? Chizru l'manatchem. Go back into your cave." Hadu azul itbu treisar yarchei shata. They sat for another 12 months in the cave after this incident. And now they decide to go out on their own. Not because someone told them, but maybe they understood. Maybe Rashbi understood something. Amrei, mishpat reshaim begenom 12 chodesh. Is that fascinating? They said, a Rasha sits in Gehenom only 12 months. That's how we say Kaddish, if God forbid, whatever. But for 12 months is enough? Okay, what we did was bad. I could go out. And still to support that thinking, because again, he was so disconnected, he still needed a support from heaven that his thinking is right. Go out. Nafku. And this is, to me, this whole story is for the next line. There's a lot of things you could learn from this story, but the next line, to me, is the highlight. Kol hecha de'avehmachi Rabbi Eliezer, havemasi Rabbi Shimon. What's happening? 12 months later, Rashbi gets it. He says a very harsh statement on himself. Reshaim, sit 12 months, I could go out. God revealed himself again and said, go out. And his son is doing the same thing. He's burning, just like what they did 12 months ago. But this time, every time his son, Rabbi Eliezer, is burning, Rashbi is fixing. The story continues over here. They see this old man running with two hadassim in his hands and ask him, why do you want it? And he said, Echad keneged zachor, echad keneged shamor, because he said, why do you need two? One is enough. And he said, wow, look how righteous the Jewish people are, and they calm down. Okay, there's a lot of issues here. But one thing you do see, when you have an extreme opinion and a one-mind type of education, don't think that you'll be able to correct it and fix it without bringing your kids with you in that direction. Rashbi changed his life. He somehow learned. It took him 12 months and he stopped. But he couldn't do it for Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer kept burning. He continued that approach. In other words, education, an extreme education that you're giving to your kids, it's so powerful. It's so powerful that to pull it out, it's almost impossible. Rabbi Eliezer and Rashbi on that level weren't able to pull it out. What do I take from that? I take from that when you want to educate kids, there needs to be stages in life. It's clear to me that in early stage, too many messages are confusing. Yes, too many messages are confusing. Don't talk in extreme ways because then you won't be able to fix it. But too many messages are confusing. And there is where I want to introduce the Mishnah in Avot, and source 3, and the back. Yehuda ben Tema Omer. Yehuda ben Tema teaches us how we need to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This world. In other words, he's telling you, you need energy in education and trying to build. You need to always focus. You need to use the world. By the way, he's using metaphors of animals. Why? Because he's telling you, look at the world and use the energy of the world. Learn from the world in order to have that energy towards God, towards educating towards God. And then he says the famous next Mishnah. The famous next Mishnah is, Hu haya omer ben chamesh shanim lamikra. When you're 5 years old, we'll start teaching you Chumash. Ben eser lemishnah, we'll start teaching you Mishnayot when you're 10. Ben 13 lemitzvot, ben 15 letalmud, ben 18 lechupa, etc., etc. What's the point of Yehuda ben Tema over here? He's teaching us there's stages in life. Rav Kook explains that the idea of Mikra, of Chumash, is to give you the basic faith in God. That's why all Bereishit is just stories. Those stories are to give you the power of faith. Tells you that Ben Tema in education, you need to take it a step at a time. When you're 5 years old, if I'm going to start teaching you Gemara when you're five, and I'm going to start asking, you know the famous joke, the famous Abarbanel, his shita is, he asks a whole list of questions, and then he has a few pages of answers. So the famous story how this father once really was obsessed with Abarbanel, he decided he's going to teach his kid the Abarbanel. And every night he came back from work and was teaching his kid the Abarbanel. The kid grows up and becomes the biggest apikoros in the world. They all said, what happened? You learn with him every day. He said, yeah, I used to fall asleep in the middle of the questions. I never got to the answers. In other words, Ben Chamesh, if you take a five-year-old and you try to analyze with him Gemara questions, tells you Ben Tema, you're not going to get anywhere. He's not there. I want to say the same thing. Living in Israel, looking also here in our modern Orthodox world, you can't take a five-year-old and start giving him the complexity of understanding our mission. I think if you take a five-year-old and you put him in front of, we want everything. We want Torah, and we want Mada, and we want this, and we're part of this, and we're part of that. I think the kids are confused. I think a five-year-old to grasp that is very difficult. It's very difficult. It needs to come in stages. When he's 5 years old, let's build his faith, his basic. Ben Chamesh Amikro, says Rav Kook, the point is, build his religion. Build his faith. Give him the tools. Ben Eser LeMishnah, okay, now let's start adding in some questions. A little bit, slowly. Only when he's 15, we're going to start throwing in the Gemara, analytical opinions, some statements that are complicated. Same thing, I believe, today. You know, 5 minutes? Today, many times school wants to do these, not always through sports, meaning in Israel, many times Gesher, it's called Gesher, where they do these meetings between from schools and non-from schools, all of these type of engagement. But I think it's beautiful, but depends on which stage you do it. Depends on which stage you do it. I'll be honest, they did it to us in the Tiv Meir. I still remember, 15 years old. And I remember it was really, really complicated. They took us into a room with a group of a secular school. I didn't have answers for it, and it was a serious question. I remember. Ooh, good question. I have an answer. And then they said, okay, we'll go back to yeshiva, we'll talk about it. But I'm not sure that was the right stage to do it. If they would have done it for me when I was a senior, and I already built up a little bit of what I'm thinking, or maybe better when I, in the Hesder, when you join the army, and you're suddenly shoulder to shoulder with secular soldiers, it's beautiful. You're already mature. You somehow understand what your vision is. You're doing it together, so we're not anymore on both sides. Hey, we're fighting the same war here. Then we could talk. But when we start doing these exchanges early, I think we're confusing our kids. They need tools. They need focus. I'll end with a very interesting report that came out. Majority of Israeli kids who take off their kippot still maintain their right-wing Israeli politics opinions, which means no two-state solution, no giving back any type of land. That teaches me one thing. As religious Zionists, at least in Israel, we are focused way more on the Zionist piece than on the religious piece. And therefore, when the kid grows up and he decides, God forbid, to say goodbye to the religious piece, his right-wing opinion on the land does not go away. It still stays. And that's something I think we're working hard. I think we're doing a lot of achievements. But both in Israel and in America, when we walk in communities and walk in schools, I think in early stage we need to give them the tools to have the ability later on to become the models that we believe in, which is engaging in the world, being part of the world, being Zionist, being modern. But let's make sure that in the right stage, that comes in and not too early. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Feldman. The next speaker will start in about 10 minutes. We have students in this room. And if you didn't get a chance to register yet, please make sure to do that. It's very helpful.